listening to Wandering Jews with Josh and Roy. I'm Roy.
And I'm Josh. This is the podcast where two youngish Jewish dads get baked and wonder what it means to be a Jew today. Today, on episode 77, we get ripped from the headlines. After that, we wonder about summer jobs, and then we discuss some blazed blessings.
Blazed blessings. But before we get into all of that goodness, a special thank you to all of our patrons on Patreon. And for those who have not yet had the opportunity to become Patreon supporters, go to the show notes, click on the link. It's so easy. Anyone could do it. Remember the caveman ads that Geico had? So easy a caveman could do it, and the caveman was all offended. One of their best campaigns. But that is not what we're here to talk about today. Patreon, show notes, link, and thank you. I mean, I do really appreciate it, and it is a simple act, but I don't want to spend the whole show talking about Patreon. I want to talk about weed.
Well, Roy, what did you pick up for us this week?
I picked up a strain called White Truffle because it just sounded fancy.
Very fancy.
You know, you throw truffle on anything, truffle oil on anything, and you're talking about a whole nother game, right? French fries, truffle French fries. I don't have any other examples, but you know what I mean.
Sure. Yeah, truffle's a special word.
This just sort of caught my eye, white truffle, and I don't know all that much about it except that it tested at 31.48%, which would make it one of our heavy hitter club members.
I think it's interesting that they named the strain after something, because there's already a white truffle. There's a white truffle mushroom. So when you Google it, you come up with the mushrooms.
You know, I don't know if you know this, but a lot of growers are not trained in SEO. They're not approaching the strain name from a search engine optimization framework, but they should. And I guarantee you that the new and big and hotness companies are.
That's for sure. Well, let's pop this canister open.
Delightful. Man, this is really testing my brain's ability to put into words what I'm smelling.
There's a lot of hairs on here.
It is a hairy. It is. It reminds me of some of my friends growing up. So really, really hairy.
And it seems a little dry compared to some of the other strains we sometimes smoke.
There's a lot of whiteness to it, a lot of white hairs.
A lot of white truffle, if you
will. Now I get it. Do you remember the White Widow strain? Remember there was some other sort of lineages of the white strain that had all, you know, predominantly white hairs and so forth, crystals?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have a sort of a distinct any one particular note coming through. It just smells really nice. Like if you were at a party and you popped this canister open and offered somebody to take a whiff, they would be like, "Ooh, that smells good." So that's all I can say. It just smells good. Not diesel-y, not piney, not lemony, not earthy, not a million other E's, but just good. On that note, Josh, what does the internet say about white truffle cannabis?
White truffle is an indica-dominant hybrid that is the type of gorilla butter. The strain produces a quick-hitting head high that will clear your mind of worry. Eventually, these effects can be felt throughout your body, leaving you in a relaxed trance. Consumers have enjoyed white truffle's weed describe the high as calming and slightly buzzy. This strain is best when enjoyed after a long day of work or during the evening hours to relax and unwind. White truffle features a savory and earthy flavor profile accompanied by a mild skunky aroma. Mm-hmm. Medical marijuana patients choose white truffle to relieve symptoms associated with stress, fatigue. And according to growers, this strain will flower into a dense spade-shaped buds with deep purple foliage that almost appears black.
Boy, I really appreciate that description. That went into whole other levels of description that we've never really gone into. I liked it because now I can actually picture the plant it came from, which is kind of a nice exercise to do. I love those weed plants that have really, really dark leaves, almost black leaves. Those are beautiful plants, in my opinion.
Well, now that we know what this white truffle looks like, let's find out what it feels like.
We'll be right back.
I think it is exactly how it was described in that this is the perfect after-work high.
I know what you mean, Jelly Bean. I feel like I came home from a long day of work and I, you know, tucked into some excellent after-work cannabis and now I feel a lot better. That's how I feel.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, you know, some people like to get away, take a holiday. Just kidding. I don't have the rights to that song. But, you know, people like to come home and have a cocktail, or have a beer, have a glass of wine, or have a drink, or have a margarita, or whatever. Mm-hmm. I prefer a bowl of weed. That's just how I roll.
Do you have your weed in, like, a liquor cabinet type of thing, credenza thing, kind of like how, like, one would imagine a 1940s coming home from work father would like just open up the liquor cabinet?
I have that, but it's upstairs in my room.
Oh, okay.
Kids are still a little on the younger side. I don't really want like my glass paraphernalia. Plus, I just don't want them like touching stuff or breaking stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they don't need to interact with that stuff. But I have it in a lovely glass credenza upstairs in my bedroom.
That's why I always wanted to get one of those little model trains that would go around the ceiling, because then the kids could never touch it. And then you could put things in it and no one could ever get to it. It's like the one secret place in the house. And then all you need is a spur line that just goes down to load things up, but you can keep that hidden.
I'm sorry, is spur line like a model railroad term?
Yeah.
That's right. You are a model railroad enthusiast, are you not? There's too much evidence on past episodes. You love them.
I love reading the magazines.
That's the funniest part.
You know what else I like reading?
The headlines.
Ripped. From the headline.
The first headline is from the Oregonian. And the headline is, Oregon ban on synthetic cannabis products will be nation's first. And this is a story about the synthetic CBN, which is like the drudge.
Not the Christian Broadcasting Network, the other CBN.
It's like, you know, how there's CBD and all these other different sort of compounds. The CBN is sort of not sort of central to the plant, but a lot of products are used like those gelatins and things like that.
You can sell them in places that are allowed to sell CBD, but not THC, like grocery stores, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. So in Oregon, they want to sort of make it so you can only purchase that stuff at a cannabis dispensary, not just at the supermarket. Where right now, if you go to the supermarket, it's like CBD everywhere.
CBD, it is CBD everywhere. I went to the mall by my house. There was like a CBD store in the mall now.
Is it a kiosk or it's actually in
the mall? It's like a store. It's like a Royal Storefront store. It's like a pretty good one.
Oh, man.
Washington Square Mall. You know, that's a nice mall.
Interesting.
Crazy, but true. If you're ever in the Tigard, Oregon area, y'all.
How on earth do they fill a whole store with just CBD?
It was a lot of open space, let's call it that. You know, it's like, do we need all of this store for this three shelf structure here? But I don't know, man. But it's interesting, you know, remind me, did the article get into why in particular Oregon wanted to ban that particular compound?
We cover all the stories, Roy, right?
We do. We just don't remember it.
And we've talked about like the Delta 8 THC and things like that. And so they put all the synthetic stuff together to make a whole product and it's just not regulated. Like they test it for pesticides and all this other stuff, but they're not regulating the product.
You know what they say? You got to keep it regulated.
The company they're talking about, this Wild, have you ever had those gummies? Those Wild gummies?
Oh yeah. Who hasn't had Wild gummies? They're delicious.
They apparently are the number one selling type of those CBD gummies. And it says in there that the new season Whole Food Market is like, you know, 20% of their sales is just in that store. So they would like lose out if this goes down.
No doubt. That's wild. No pun intended. I'm not a big fan of the ban it mindset. You know, the ban it mindset is what created prohibition, which we just spent the last 80 years overturning. 80 years. That's how long it took.
Yeah.
To overturn it effectively. The idea of introducing bans on other things right now, when we know that the whole concept of bans just creates black markets, which creates violence and cartels. And, you know, we know this, we've seen this movie.
Yeah.
Same thing's happening at the federal level right now, where the Biden administration is talking about, you know, banning menthol cigarettes or lowering the nicotine levels. Anytime you are messing with the market, you are creating an incentive for somebody to cheat your new rules. It's just bad governance. It's not even a moral issue. It's just bad governance.
It's so interesting you say that, because I sort of look at this issue and I think of it as like hot dog filler. And if like the government wanted to ban the filler, I don't really know what that is. And I don't really know what the CBN is either. So to me, it's like gummy filler. And so I don't want this unregulated, what's in the filler, you know, what's in the CBN and what, you know, what they're doing to it. Like, let's just have pure 100% kosher beef Franks.
That's right. You want the whole flower. You want the whole ensemble, the entourage, as they call it.
Yeah.
You know, it's an entourage effect. That's not just about the show. We'll wait and see what happens in Oregon and see if it kind of has an impact or if it even gets through, because that's, you know, a big impact of real companies here that are making sales. And they've got a voice now, you know. It's no longer black market. They've got lobbyists and everything.
They sure do. The next headline, Roy, is from the St. Louis Jewish Light. And the headline is, two baby leopards born at St. Louis Zoo. So what's so Jewish about them? The listener at home needs to understand that we cut another headline from the St. Louis Jewish Light, which was basically just the mission statement of one of the social service agencies in St. Louis. And it just seems like there's not a lot of headlines in St. Louis to cover.
It is a content black hole. And we are all just sacrificing little nibs of ideas and stories into it on a perpetual and expanding basis, like the universe itself. The black hole of content expands and expands, and it just starts sucking in mission statements.
Let's talk about these leopards. I didn't realize that they were endangered and all the Jewish connections to leopards.
Well, I know that leopards have a very prominent role in the Torah, but like, what other connections to leopards do we people have?
I mean, I think we like the print. Could you imagine a leopard print talus, like a statement piece?
In bokeh?
Oh, man.
I'm happy for the St. Louis Zoo, and I'm happy for these two new little leopards. If you're going to be in a cage, let it be a nice cage.
The next headline, Roy, is from the Times of Israel. And the headline is, in the U.S., some fading reform and conservative synagogues go Orthodox to stay afloat.
This is the story of the success of the Chabad house model.
You know, I get it, though. It says like that 1 in 5 reform synagogues and 1 in 10 conservative synagogues, you know, have gone under in the last so many years. So, you know, like, as we know, you know, what are they going to do with these buildings? They got to give them to someone.
Right? They got to give them to someone. The Chabad model is a very effective model because it is really a community engagement model, truly a community engagement model. And so when all these other organizations are sort of just trying to maintain what they have by keeping the same members and growing very incrementally, the Chabad model comes in and is like just heavy investment in relationship building at the basic community level.
Yeah.
Come over to our house and pray over here and then stay for a meal. I mean, I know this because I grew up in a Chabad house and was bar mitzvahed at a Chabad in San Diego that grew out of someone's house into a lovely suite in a strip mall. And that's where it was. And that's where I was bar mitzvahed, in a, you know, a nice strip mall. I mean, a nice little shopping center, more shopping center than strip mall. No disrespect, because my first coffee shop job was in that same shopping mall.
It seems like a lot of members of these synagogues are sort of anxiety filled prior to the conversion into a Chabad house, you know?
Maybe not calling it a conversion. You know, that's the problem, dude. That's the problem. It's very interesting because remember we talked about sort of the pew pew research on American Jewry that came out like a year or so ago. And one of the findings was that like the middle is falling out and the left and the right are growing stronger.
Yeah.
In the Jewish context, it's that like, the conservative synagogue and conservative Judaism is shrinking up, and Reform Judaism to some extent is, and sort of secularism is growing significantly. And then on the other side, like Orthodoxy and Hasidism and super Orthodoxy and ultra mega extra Orthodoxy is like, you know, growing like gangbusters. I'm happy that the communities that were struggling have new Jewish life in them because like that's really what should matter. But I'm also saddened by like what seems like a pattern in our society of the middle just winning away and away. Same with like the political center, you know, that's where we see it the most, but like it's happening everywhere. I guess what I'm saying is we all have to work on our cores.
I remember when my favorite store, a Bullock's, became a Robinson's May. Now everything's just on Macy's, you know?
Such a throwback.
I would just rather, honestly, that the store stay open, you know? So if it's changing if it's all going to become Macy's in the end anyways, you know, I'd rather it still be open than shut down and turned it into a Spirit of Halloween.
God, I fucking hate those fucking stores.
Yeah.
My kids always want to go, and they actually don't want to go because it's scary in there. And also, I don't want to feed the Halloween industrial complex, mm-hmm. which is also tightly linked to the diabetes industrial complex. So next headline anyway.
The last headline is from theforward.com, and the headline is, "The Hong Kong Bagel Wars are more intense than you could ever imagine."
How couldn't they be?
So there are two bagel stores in Hong Kong, and they are fighting with each other because one of the stores like paid armed security or guys that looked like armed security in front of the other store and told them it was closed and that people couldn't go in there. Okay, but then it gets worse because it turns out that the stores are kind of owned by the same people. And so, like, there's a lot of sort of ownership stuff going on.
This is so meta commentary.
Yeah. Had some family living in Singapore, and when they were living there, we talked about there needing to be a bagel store, and then by the time they left, there was a very successful bagel store, and it was not ours.
You could have been the bagel king of Singapore.
I could have been, but now there's another king and queen, I'm sure. But I think that there is a market for these bagels all over the world.
Clearly, because bagels are delicious, and I love that there's two bagel shops in Hong Kong, and they're battling each other. It's just like how it's meant to be.
But since the story took off, like I guess both of the shops are accused of offensive Jewish cosplay. One of them says like, you know, grab life by the matzo balls. You know, they're very kitschy. You know, you go into these donut shops and it's very kitschy donut shop. It's the same thing, but with Judaism.
Is it like particularly an American part of Hong Kong?
It is in Kennedy Town.
Kennedy Town, exactly. Which is funny. Like that Hong Kong has like a little America. I never really realized that it had like a little New York or a little America, but it would make sense that if it had a little New York or a little America, that it had a bagel shop, and that bagel shop would be kitschy and ridiculous.
Let me read you one quote from the story. The restaurants are, quote, part of a Hong Kong genre of restaurants that use sex and race to mock and mimic authentic ethnic food cultures for expat, wealthy local and finance bro customers, tweeted a Hong Kong-based historian. The historian is calling them finance bros.
I mean, here's the thing. I don't care if the shop is kitschy. How are the bagels? Let's get down to tachlis, as we say in Yiddish, to like the matter at hand. Are the bagels good? Is the schmear good? Are they making whitefish salad? What's their game? Are they doing lox? Mm-hmm. What's going on? There must be a good lox game there.
I would think so.
It's a lot of fish eating happening. Well, shit, if we are ever to Hong Kong, I'm going to check it out. But if anybody who happens to listen to this show has been to Hong Kong and has any familiarity with either of these bagel shops, please hit us up. We will talk to you.
Have you ever traveled internationally? And, you know, American breakfasts are so different than breakfasts all over the world. And when you travel, sometimes the pastry just isn't good enough for you. You want something a little bit better, you know? And so it's good to have a bagel store.
And it's good to have a bagel story because we never miss an opportunity to talk about bagels.
So, Roy, I have to ask you, how high are you?
Wonderfully so. If Willy Wonka smoked weed, this is what Willy Wonka would smoke, white truffle.
Are you feeling like high off the ground right now or very well grounded? What are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling pretty grounded. I don't feel like sluggish or droopy or sunset cidery. I do not feel like a good night right now. I feel very energized, you know, just very grounded. It's delightful strain so far.
It has been delightful. I also am not feeling high off the ground, so it makes me want to pack another bowl of these so we could get a little bit higher.
Well, hey, man, twist my arm. Twist it. All right, I guess we're going to re-spark. And we'll be right back. Holy shit. I watched this crazy fucking art house movie from the 1970s. It's a very famous surrealist film called The Holy Mountain. Uh-huh. It is the craziest shit I've ever seen. And it'll be the craziest shit you've ever seen when you watch it. It's a perfect movie to watch by yourself really high or with somebody else you love really high. Because it is just fucking bananas.
I guess I'll have to check it out.
The Holy Mountain. I got it by like subscribing to some like Flubi or Dubendorf or some streaming service you've never heard of that you only need for this one thing. How are you feeling, Joshua?
I'm feeling good, man.
On round two, ding, ding.
This is a great after-work strain, and it's a heavy hitter, quick hitter, just relaxes you instantaneously. You know, it's so nice.
Yeah, this is a great smoke.
Yeah.
Very happy with it.
Good.
You know, you never know sometimes. You never know. You go to the shop, you pick a strain based on nothing. You know, you come home, you roll the dice. What you got? This time it came up whatever the numbers are that are good.
So I have to ask you, Roy.
Go ahead.
What you wondering about?
Oh, so, you know, like summertime is here. Thank the Lord. Mm-hmm. I love the summer. And one of the things that I think about when I think about summertime is I think about all the summers past and how summers have changed as I've gotten older. And one of the things that has been consistent is like working in the summer. So now I work full time. So I work year round and it doesn't make a difference. But when I was younger, like I was definitely getting summer jobs as soon as I could every summer. And I had some crazy ass summer jobs. And I know that you also have been a working man since you were young.
Maybe it's because I didn't want to be at home, but I has always liked working.
There's a through line here. What was your first job?
Well, there was a period of time when I was probably 14 and my stepfather owned a video store and I had to get a work permit to work there.
In Santa Monica?
No, it was in the top of Beverly Glen, like on the top of the hill. There's a shopping center at the top of Beverly Glen.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a little video rental store there that he had purchased for a very short period of time.
Okay.
And I worked there and that was my first job, I think. What was your first job?
My first job was as a ticket taker at a movie theater, an usher at an AMC theater in La Jolla.
I've also had that job.
You have? I tell my kids a story about how this one time I was supposed to just stand there between movies when nobody's coming and just wait to take tickets and not do anything. And so I just kind of started walking around the lobby. And then I just kind of was like walking in big circles around the lobby. And then eventually somebody came over to me that was like in management. They'd probably been watching me on the camera for 5 or 10 minutes. And they're like, if you want to be part of the AMC family, you're going to need to conduct yourself more professionally or something like that. It was like such a tiny little diss down.
Yeah.
But then I was like, I don't think I'm going to stick around and be part of the AMC family. I'm going to move on to become part of the Schlotsky's Deli family.
Okay. The movie theater I worked at was only one screen. So we actually did have like a 2-hour break in between 30-minute chunks of work. It was a great job.
Yeah. You weren't doing like a lot of like construction. You weren't like digging ditches.
And the other issue, you know, we could discuss if you want, is that it was an independently owned theater. And so unlike the AMCs, this guy didn't have an arrangement with the studios to get the movies that you wanted to see. So we weren't getting
You weren't getting the first runs.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there's 10 people in the theater and, you know, how long does that take?
Yeah. That's the life, man. That's the life. I remember one time I had a job during college working for a neighborhood friend, family friend's dad's company. And I don't know what he was actually doing at the company, but my job was to like take this frozen bull semen and then put a small amount of the semen into this machine that was like measuring the motility of the sperm. So like you could see like if they were wiggling or not, or how many were wiggling or not. And then based on that sort of percentage, you could determine like the motility rate, the likelihood of impregnation from these sperm. I spent that whole summer with bull cum in a lab. So yeah. It was a strange, and I still don't actually know what he was doing at the company. Were we the ones making the machines or was he the one selling the semen? What actually was the business? I don't remember.
It's too bad you didn't take to that, Roy, because I think being a fertility doctor is a pretty lucrative profession.
It is. I'm not weirded out by watching those little swimmers.
Yeah.
I mean, life itself is all fucking weird anyway.
Okay. So what do you think is a good summer job then? If that is not your ideal summer job, what is a good summer job?
Well, I think there's two answers to this question at least. One is, as a parent now, and sort of what I'm encouraging my kids to do. And then the other is, like, as a kid, what sounds the most fun to do. Mm-hmm. Those are the two different answers in my head.
Okay.
I care less about, like, where they work. I more care that they work.
Mm-hmm.
And that they, like, ideally it'd be in some sort of, like, customer service, food service, retail service. You know, you start at the bottom. That's the bottom rung, is mm-hmm. like, and also teaches you so many important skills that you're going to need in your whole life, that, like, when we were younger and they were telling us these things were skills, we just kind of rolled our eyes and went back to work, you know? Mm-hmm. But it turns out they were not wrong, because they are now us. We are they.
I think the ideal summer job for someone who is just starting out is a job that sort of ends at 7 p.m. or 7:30, because then you're sort of like working this afternoon thing and you're working 3 days a week, and then you can go out with your friends, but then you kind of have a lot of sort of separation from your parents that are still working. True. So it's sort of like a good sort of like faux separation that is probably healthy at that age.
You want a shift that sort of goes from like 11 to 7 or 1 to 7 or something like that.
Yeah.
Totally. I worked as a lifeguard a couple summers. That was like, you know, long stretches of boredom punctuated by moments of interestingness.
Mm-hmm.
A kind of a boring ass job, but also kind of a fun job.
When I was a lifeguard, I was the only one, or I got good at or something, testing the pH levels in the pool. For some reason, I was the only one who like did that, you know, and so that was sort of my real job.
You were the water boy.
Yeah, I guess so.
When Water Boy came out, did you have an instant connection to it?
Probably.
Do you love Water Boy, the Adam Sandler film?
Not particularly.
Really, you don't think it's funny? It's so fucking so dumb. The way he's been able to like make stuff that is just painfully dumb and also heart-filled, like, and funny. It's a strange sweet spot that he rides.
I do think, though, that the ultimate summer job right now would be at a dispensary. If you could get that shift at a dispensary, and then you're just sort of like, that would be pretty nice. I bet they don't allow high school students in there.
Yeah, probably not high school students. Probably a good college job and probably not a great high school job. I don't know. I mean, I would just tell them to get a job anywhere, just doing anything, a coffee shop, a bagel shop, a donut shop, or brave the mall, you know, get a job in the mall and then become one of the mall rats.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, and I mean that term with endearment, but also a little bit of scorn, yeah, as is appropriate.
Yeah.
I'm endlessly fascinated by the whole shopping mall culture. Not the culture like of people who go to shopping malls, but like the society that is created in like every shopping mall. You know, every shopping mall is like a whole city.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the store people, it's got the infrastructure people and the facilities people, and it's got, you know, the security people, and it's got all kinds of people at all different intersections of the world.
Yeah.
And they're all interacting together in this building.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it's a little mini society.
You know, just like if you go into a hospital, that hospital is a mini society.
Right.
Thousands of people work there. Tens of thousands of people engage with it. It's like a real thing.
Hmm.
Hospitals are real things, Josh. That's what I'm saying. Hospitals are real things.
If you work in a mall, let us know what it's like. Because if it is like there's this hierarchy and there's a mayor and there's like a whole town council that we don't know about, I'd like to know.
I would like to know where the secret meetings are. Also, if you happen to be the same person who also went to Hong Kong, then like that would be amazing. Then you should definitely, it's a sign at this point, you should contact the show.
They probably have some crazy malls in Hong Kong.
Oh, shit. I bet they have crazy ass malls in Hong Kong.
Oh.
And those would also be their own societies.
Yes. But don't you think that some mall owners do a better job of creating a constitution, if you will, for the society to flourish, you know, sort of based on what they are doing and how they are sort of viewing the creation?
I mean, I definitely think that there are competing interests in every mall culture. Different people have different visions of how things should go, and there's battles and politics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I mean. Like Abercrombie and Fitch is probably in like a secret alliance with like the Lego store, because the owners both have the same point of view about what to do about the water fountains.
Right.
So there's like all of these secret undercurrent relationships and connections. And the customers are really just kind of like water flowing through the building.
Yeah.
Bringing money, which powers it, and then kind of moving along.
Do you think that the parking lot is considered like the suburb of the community? And do you think that if there's like a crime committed out in the parking lot, someone in the society, so it's like, oh, well, that's far from me. I don't care about that. You know, like it's sort of, they adopt sort of the same things that we adopt in our societies.
I mean, I don't know what their stance is on parking lots, but I do know this. There's a lot of opportunity for murder and intrigue in the shopping mall culture. You know, there's a lot of drama playing out in those stores.
If you've committed a crime in a shopping mall, let us know.
You know what? I don't even think that the police have jurisdiction. I think only the mall cops have jurisdiction over murders in shopping malls.
Yeah.
That's a fact. If there's a murder in a shopping mall, the mall cops have jurisdiction. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, wow, Roy. How high are you right now?
You know, this white truffle is as delightful as it sounds. Maybe that's why they called it white truffle. Maybe because it's just so damn delightful.
It is delightful. I'm having such a nice time.
Like thin shaved truffle on top of like chocolate something or other.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Truffle oil on French fries. Does that complete our segment, what Roy would eat right now?
Yeah, I think it does.
Okay, good.
But there is something that I've been thinking about, Roy, that I want to talk to you about.
Tell me.
So my kids, they were not sort of that into doing the Shabbat thing all the time. And by all that time, I mean once a week on Fridays. They're into it, but they just don't want to do it, you know? And so one idea I had to sort of get them more involved, because I didn't want it to be a fight every time. You know, I want it to be a positive experience for them. So the fact that we're fighting over like, are we doing Shabbat? Like, I don't want to do Shabbat, that kind of thing. I want it to be positive. So anyways, I said, why don't you lead Shabbat this time? You know, and then the next one, the other one could lead Shabbat. We're just going to go around the room. We're going to all lead it our own ways. You can do your own prayers. You can, you know, whatever it is, you know, these are the elements.
Right. These are the elements.
Right. So they're doing the challah first. Then we do tzedakah, you know, and then, you know, we're just doing it in different order. That's all that's happening. Okay. And it was meaningful. I guess the point is that we did it and it felt good. You know, like it felt like, you know, I feel like we are sort of recognizing this moment as a marker and, you know, the kids are having positive association. So anyways, it got me thinking about other Blaze blessings that we could be doing, because I know that you always do a blessing over cannabis, right? The one about fragrant spice, correct?
I do the Borei Mine Besamim blessing. Yes, the fragrant herbs that we used. I borrowed it from the Havdalah service. From that moment where you're passing around the incense or the potpourri or whatever and everyone's smelling it and blessing that smell.
Yeah. So I guess when I was doing the Shabbat by the elements, it got me thinking of all the other elements when we're smoking weed that we could be blessing, you know?
True. I love it. Yeah.
Honestly, when you think about like the bong water, that's a blessing, right?
It is a blessing. That's very true. That water is doing an important job in cleaning that smoke for you.
The mime, right? That means water, right?
Mime, yeah, exactly. And it would be like the rachatz version from the Passover Seder, rachatz meaning to like wash, lirachot.
Would you bless it when you pour it into the bong? Like when would the bong water blessing happen?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I guess it would make sense to do it when you're sort of washing out your piece and putting fresh water in it.
Oh, so it's more of a cleansing sort of blessing.
Yeah, well, you're washing it out. You're cleaning out your bubbler or your bong or whatever. And as you're cleaning it out and you're washing out the water and you're washing out the dirty water and getting it ready and you're filling it with clean water, you can sort of bless that water for the work it's going to do, you know, and what it does for us every moment of our life, which is to cleanse us all the time.
What about wrapping a joint, Roy? That seems to me like it could be a blessing. We already do wrapping blessings, right?
We do. And we don't. You don't mean that we wrap our blessings.
No.
But you mean that there are blessings literally for things that are being wrapped.
Right, around like our arms and stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. The blessing for the talis, for the talit, that you put around your shoulders and you bless the experience of, oh, I'm so terribly sorry.
Hey, I'm in Hong Kong.
No, I'm in the middle of a story, man. Call me back. These listeners, they're so good.
Whoa.
You know, yeah, we put the talit around ourselves and when we say litatef to put on the talis.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know that we say a blessing when there's something new, but like when you smoke with a new person, should you be saying a blessing?
Every time I smoke with somebody for the first time, particularly if that person is Jewish and is open to it, I offer a shehechianu.
Uh-huh.
the blessing for new experiences and new moments and sort of culminating moments. Mm-hmm. Actually, my aunt, who lives in Israel, she was in the United States visiting my parents, and I smoked with her, and she's 72, and it was the first time she'd ever smoked weed.
Really?
So it was the first time she'd ever smoked weed, and it was the first time smoking with me, and it was the first time I'd seen her in like 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so like this person who I knew 20 years ago was like just like a distant family member is now like this cool lady that I'm hanging out and smoking a joint with for the first time. So that was definitely a Shehecheyanu moment that she joined me in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then, you know, wrapping the joint, you mean like literally like rolling a joint and making that blessing.
The tongue could be part of the blessing.
It could.
At the end.
Yeah, maybe just keep away from my joints, man. I don't know what the fuck you're doing there at the end. You don't need that much moisture. Oh. It's for the ASMR fans out there. ASMR fans who are also self-loathing. Oh, man, did you listen to that podcast where that guy made that one sound? It was disturbing. I couldn't stop playing it. Yeah, no, I think this is a rich topic for investigation and continued thinking about. At the end of the day, cannabis is a lot of things. It is also a sacrament. It's a blessing. It's a tool we can use to bless other things. And it's a thing that we should be blessing because it is a blessing. Imagine if we did not have it. Imagine if cannabis did not exist at all. And it just wasn't an option. There wasn't a plant like it at all. It just didn't exist. You smoked tobacco or very sort of, you know, fringe dandelion, dried dandelion herbs or some shit like that, you know?
Yeah.
You couldn't smoke anything like cannabis. That would be a real bummer of a world. It's a much bigger blessing of a world to live in a world with cannabis.
Absolutely. Amen.
Amen, amen, amen.
So, Roy, I have to ask you, would you grow this weed?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah? You're feeling good?
If our voters hadn't selected me to grow wedding cake, I would just be growing white truffle instead. That's where really? I think I am. So maybe I'll just get both seeds and just start from seed. Both start from seed. You know, it's kind of got a champagne-y kind of quality because it's kind of like buzzy. And they remember the description said buzzy.
Hmm.
Like I have a little buzz going.
That's fun.
Yeah, but it's like from weed, not from booze.
When you have a buzz, do you want to be social?
But yeah, I could definitely go be social right now and that would not be a problem.
Okay.
But I could also just like hang out by myself and crack myself up. Sometimes I just do that. Sometimes I just like to be with myself and get real goofy.
Yeah, that's always fun.
True story. No pictures. Would you grow this, Josh?
I think I would. This is one of my favorite strains in a long time, honestly. And it may be because it is a good after work strain and we're recording this podcast after work.
And this was grown by Focus North in Oregon.
Focus North.
You know, maybe what we need to do is we need to take a look at some of the other things they grow and see if they're as consistently good across strains. Is it a grower thing or a strain thing? That's how I would advance my research on the topic.
Maybe we should do that from now on and just go deep with that grower.
We could do that. If we did that, then I'd want to have that grower on and talk to them about their plants. And I can't imagine a grower wouldn't want the opportunity to talk about their product.
We have homework for the next 2 weeks.
Damn, look at us.
We're going to do it. I sang it on the pod.
Delightful, delightful strain. White truffle, check it out. Pick it up. Definitely available in the Portland area. Don't know about where you are.
If you're enjoying the pod, rate, review us, subscribe, do all those things. And until next time, I'm Josh.
I am still Roy.
Keep wondering.